Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
Welcome to this episode of Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host, and we have, I've been waiting for this for a long time, we have one of the most interesting guests, an unusual organist on the planet. Now, I don't know what that means to you radio listeners, but this person in today in the studio, he's got a resume that reads like no other organist resume anywhere in the universe. And, of course, anybody who's an organist already knows who I'm talking about, Christoph Bull. Welcome, Dr. Bull. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing great. Great to be here.
Well, it is great to have you. Christoph Bull is, well, I just, you know, obviously with his name, you can tell he's from Germany. And we're going to hear about that. We want to hear about his childhood. We want to hear about what brought him to America, all of those things. But here he is in Los Angeles, and he is one of the most active people. He made the first recording on the organ at the Disney Hall. He's played in Lincoln Center. He's played in Segerstrom Hall. He's played in the cathedrals in Moscow, the Cathedral of Saint-Denis in Paris. He's played at Strasbourg. He's played everywhere. The Segerstrom Center here was the first place I heard him right after moving here. Just a phenomenal organist. He's the organist in residence on the largest church organ in the world at the First Congregational. I mean, I could just go on for the whole rest of the time. You could just go home, Christoph. But I want to add this little part here. He has also played in rock clubs like the Viper Room, the Roxy, and the Whiskey in Los Angeles. What organist has that on his resume? You have to give us a little preview of what you're going to tell us. This is wild.
Yeah, I guess it is. You know what? It's funny because I always had that dichotomy of playing both classical music and rock and pop music. So even at home, when I was practicing the piano, I would do my classical homework, and then I'd go off. And then my dad would say, "Is that what you're supposed to be practicing?" And I'm like, "I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be doing it, but I am doing it."
How many teachers did you go through as a child here?
That is funny because my first piano teacher, he actually was like that too. He'd assign me some classical stuff, but also some jazzy things.
Okay, so he gave it to you right from the beginning.
He did, but then I got moved to a more strict Germanic classical teacher.
Yeah.
And her name was Kling. Kling,
well,
great name for a
piano. It tells it all, yeah. It tells it all, doesn't it?
And she was great. I learned a lot from her, but she was definitely more on, kept me on the straight and narrow, and so I had to do the improv on my own time.
Okay, yeah. So that wasn't part of what she let you do, huh? So you were born in Mannheim?
Yes.
And right away, at age five, you know, you were picking out melodies, and you were playing organ recitals and piano recitals, and
well, it started with the piano for me, like it does with a lot of people.
Sure.
And I remember that my brother was still is 2 years older than me, and he took lessons.
It didn't change.
It didn't change over time, and he still treats me like he's the older brother.
He's a big brother.
Okay. Come on, at this point, what does it matter? I've almost caught up with you, but yeah. So he was taking lessons, so I heard it a little bit. But my grandmother, great-grandmother, had a piano at her house.
Wow.
And so I was sitting down, and I just remember it making sense to me immediately. You know, and kind of it does make sense. That's a great thing about the piano. It is actually a very logical instrument. You know, you go to the right, you go higher, you go to the left, you go lower.
I can't tell you how many people that doesn't make sense to.
I remember it was Christmas time, and my brother had been practicing some Christmas tunes, so I was able to pick them out on the piano. So that's how it started. And then I was making up little stories on the piano, you know, about a good king and some evildoers that were capturing him, and then he got rescued by the angels.
So already you were accompanying your own film in your head, right?
In a way, I was.
And
the angels were the black keys. I figured out that if you just go black keys, it'll sound good.
A little pentatonic sounds like angels.
Exactly, and you hold down the sustain pedal, and it'll sound great.
This is great. And what age were you then?
That was when I was five. And I think so my parents let me do that a little bit longer by myself, but they did sign me up for recorder. that was kind of a standard way to start
yes,
back then.
Yes, it is for our kids, yeah. too. You know, second, third grade, every kid gets a recorder stuck in their hand.
We did recorder, and that was with the same teacher that later taught me piano, and she also taught us ear training and theory. So I was very lucky that I had a teacher that did that, and that came in very handy later to have that knowledge. And then 1 year later, piano at age 6, and then organ I added at age 12. And again, it was this piano.
So that's after studying 6 years piano,
yes,
right?
That's right. So I already had a good background in piano. And again, it was that piano teacher who looked at me and said, your legs are now long enough, you can take up the organ.
You're ready. Okay.
That qualified me to start the organ.
And did that come from church? I mean, had you heard the organ in church? Or
yes.
Was that part of
yeah,
it?
My family was a church-going family. My mother was an elder. And my dad always was very interested in reading the Bible or reading the Quran even. And but he was into the Bible, but he also read the Quran.
I see in your bio it says you've read both.
I did.
And a couple of other books I can't even pronounce.
Yes. I got that from my dad, that interest,
that interest in philosophy
and
theology.
And I find it interesting to read these old scriptures from different tradition and compare them.
Yeah,
what's the same?
Exactly.
What's different?
It's a fascinating study.
Absolutely. Anyway, the piano teacher said, your legs are long enough. And then my dad found me the best teacher in town, and I'm very grateful to him for that. Hermann Schäfer at Christuskirche in Mannheim, which was kind of the main Protestant church there. And so Mr. Schäfer auditioned me, and he really insisted that somebody had to have piano technique already. Which, by the way,
I think most people do.
Most people do. However, I think in theory somebody could start with the organ. I mean, the organ is the older instrument anyway, right? So, but you know, I think the organ teachers prefer it if somebody already has the hands.
Well, and it probably comes that way because of the little stubby legs. Who knows? But I, in my own children's choir, you know, like somebody like a David, who was my organ scholar and student,
yes.
I just found him in the children's choir. We have five in our children's choir who are little organ scholars.
That's
right,
wonderful.
In the cathedral. One of them, just after 2 years, is playing Messiaen Banquet Celeste this weekend. You know, so these kids come to us with a pretty good piano background, which speeds them up.
Absolutely.
You know, and then the organ just becomes a natural. They're so fascinated by the colors, and you know, we're so lucky here at Christ.
Absolutely. And I was too. So when Herr Schäfer gave me my first lesson, I thought, this is great. You play with your feet. And again, it seemed logical. Oh, it's just like the keyboard, only you do it with your feet, you know. And then the great thing that he did is he really threw me in full immersion, you know, literature, but also improvisation,
okay.
Him playing right away. And I think that was great that he did that. And
well, improvisation goes hand in hand with church music,
yes,
doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Especially in liturgical churches, but probably in all churches, there needs to be that moment of filling in.
Exactly.
You know, liturgical oodle doodle. You know?
Yeah. Yes. You know,
and doing that well is an art, you know, and it doesn't necessarily come with organ lessons, you know. I know lots of people who are fine organists and can't play two notes unless it's in front of them.
And I have to be honest, I find it hard to teach. I mean, I know there's people who teach it and they're really good at it.
Really good
I'm not sure
it.
That I'm one of those because it's always come easy to me. So I'm like, hey, just do it to get over yourself.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times that's the problem. People can't get over themselves.
But as you said a couple times, it was totally logical to you. And you know, as someone who tried to teach improvisation once in a while, you know, what seems totally logical to you is totally baffling to somebody. You want to say, just go with it. Just write a question and then write an answer musically. All those kind of things makes no sense at all to anyone. So, no.
Yeah. And if I may add, I think sometimes it's also being okay with keeping it simple.
Right.
You know, because sometimes people think, oh, it has to be this complicated, amazing thing. It really, most of the time, it doesn't. You know, so I tell them, you know, keep the rhythm going and
don't stop. Sounds like a mistake. Salvation's only a half step away.
There you go. Those are the things, the so-called obvious things that we all know, but it's worth remembering that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like you had incredible preparation for, and then you went on to another school there.
Yes. Well, I finished my, the way it worked in Germany, you would go to school, I'd say the equivalent of high school. Even though the last 2 years are really more like college, you pick majors, and my majors were music and math. And when you're done with that, you go on to university. So I did that, and my studies in Oregon and piano were private. So that's kind of how that worked. But after high school was over,
so that wasn't part of your curriculum.
We had music in school, but it was more like maybe music appreciation, some theory, some history. Except in those last 2 years when I majored in music, then it was also giving a recital and doing stuff like that. Yeah,
even in high school. That's amazing.
And maybe if I could go back a little bit, I did take up the organ at age 12, and right away I got thrown into playing services and even starting to do concerts, because there seemed to always be a need for subs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which was great. It was a great way to get into it, because you weren't locked into one church. You could play a lot, but you'd get to know these different organs.
Well, and often it's the little bit of stipend that is intriguing. The poor pianists, you know, that get left behind on the piano, there's no stipend there. But the ones who began to play, I was playing in church by 12, 13,
yes,
you know, and would get little baby stipends at that time, you know. But it certainly beat doing hamburgers, you
That's
know,
right.
At the McDonald's.
Absolutely. You know it, man, because it was like that. It was like extra money, and I remember one of the first things after I had saved some money I bought was a VCR, and my friends were like, what? How can you buy a VCR? That's when VCRs still cost
no
a little bit of money.
Like
too.
Show
right.
business, right?
I loved it. Yeah, that was very nice.
Well, we've heard a little bit about the beginning. We have so much more to go,
yes, sir.
But we have to hear some music. We just have to. And so where should we start? But at the very beginning, let's hear some Bach, shall we, Christoph?
Yes, sir. Sounds like a great idea.
And why did you make this Bach recording?
Okay, so this is the prelude in G major. I also recorded the fugue, but this time I just brought the prelude. I always liked this one because it's so happy. You
it
know,
is
Bach
happy.
Has some stuff that's really exuberant. So this one is the E flat. Also, I think is very very exuberant. So this one I recorded at the occasion of Bach's 333rd birthday, which just happened on March 21st.
Last year, right?
Yes, and I recorded it at First Church. And I made a little video with my family, and I was inspired by Bob Dylan. Dylan has a music video where he holds up signs with words, and I thought, I want to do that. So I had myself and my family, we all made up these signs with good words, like joy and love and wisdom.
I love it. Well, I promise, radio listeners, we will put a link on the website so that you can go find that. Always the music and pictures and everything else are at ChristCathedralMusic.org. But here is Bach, a prelude in G major, the happy one for Bach's 333rd birthday, with Christoph Bull playing at First Congregational Church of Los Angeles. And we will be right back with so much more. Please stay tuned.
Underwritten by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange.
This is John Romero, the music director of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. And this August 7th, we have a spectacular repeat performance of the Libra Boy Choir from London. And this boy choir, ages 7 through 16, is like no other you've ever heard. Last year's performance was completely sold out. Get your tickets early.
Christ Cathedral Concerts. Great music in a sacred place. For tickets, visit ChristCathedralMusic.org.
I'm I'm Chris Mueller.
And I'm Tim Marie Millington.
Hey, on Trending, we discuss today's most relevant topics from sex to social media.
These aren't topics that are awkward or uncomfortable at all to bring up with family and friends.
We're called to be a light in the world and challenge modern ideologies for the kingdom of God and for eternal salvation.
That can feel discouraging sometimes, but here on Trending, we try to help equip you to know what's going on in the world and bring our faith into the conversation.
Hey, so listen Sundays on Relevant Radio, or you can find episodes of Trending with Chris and Tim Marie podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. Today we are interesting and exciting and every other word that goes with the name Christoph Bull. This man is just a marvel. He's a marvel musician. He's a phenomenal organist, but he's also composer, arranger. He's everything. And in the previous segment, we talked about his early studies, what led him to the organ, how he came from a musical family, and how he was improvising early on. Christoph, you're amazing. You still are. And you're happy to know that you still are amazing.
But, thank you. I try to keep it going for as long as I can.
Well, you do, 100%, 100 miles an hour. And we just heard that beautiful Bach piece. Now, tell us a little bit more about how you came to choose America and some more of your studies.
Yes. I did finish my high school education in Mannheim, Germany, and then it was time to go to university. And I went to Freiburg. Freiburg im Breisgau, which is at the edge of the Black Forest, a beautiful university town with a really good Musikhochschule, a conservatory for music, and I studied with a very eminent, preeminent organist at the time, Ludwig Dörr. And he was another one of those old school people. Yeah, where
I can tell your face. Let me just translate that face into, oh my goodness.
There was some fear, you know. It was not so easy to talk your way out of not having practice enough any given week. What he actually did is we had these little cells where we had our lessons, and he'd sit in the corner smoking a pipe.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was okay.
In those days,
I think maybe in these days, not anymore. But he smoked a pipe, and then you would play a piece, and then more often than not, he would let you suffer at first. No immediate feedback. He'd just take like another smoke while you were wondering what he's going to say.
Yeah.
But you know what he did? He did teach me a lot. And I think the main thing I took away from him was articulation. You know, he gave me a lot of pointers.
Makes all
about
the difference in the organ.
Absolutely. So important.
It's really key to us. And by now, are you fully concentrating on being an organist? Is that your goal?
You know, see, that's the thing, because I was a little bit uncertain if it really was. You know, I went through a little bit of a phase. I think I was an atheist for a few months.
Okay.
And I got through that, but I was a fervent atheist for a few months, and I had all those atheist arguments.
So how can you be an organist in the church? Huh?
I was thinking about that. Would that be possible? So I actually studied music education with organ as the main instrument. But there was definitely some uncertainty because I didn't necessarily see me as a music educator either. And what also happened at the time, I discovered predilection for writing songs. I really enjoyed writing pop songs. And I think one of the things I enjoyed, I enjoyed the music. You know, I always liked, you know, people like the Beatles, Billy Joel, Cole Porter, classic songwriters. But I also liked the format. Now, I do feel I have a little bit of a short attention span, when it comes to music. So I thought a song that's good, you know, three and a half minutes.
Ready to go.
I can deal with that. So I developed that. But that university couldn't really get me any further.
Opposition.
Yeah, exactly. They were very serious. Actually, elitist. I mean, one of the composition teachers actually told me, "I'm very elitist." He said that about himself.
Oh my gosh!
And I'm not very elitist. I feel that as musicians, I want to communicate with people who are also musicians, but also non-musicians. And I felt what a lot of people were doing at the time, they were writing stuff that was impressive to other musicians.
Yes. Our profession suffers greatly from that. Don't you think?
I think so.
I think so too. I think that's why, and you're probably one of the most respected organists in America, at least in this man's book, but
thank you,
you are, because of your eclectic look at this whole thing, you're not just playing pieces in a recital to impress other organists with everybody else yawning.
Yes.
You know, or everybody else, you know, no matter how ugly it is, as long as it has a million 16th notes, we're going to play this piece because everybody's got to like it.
Yes.
You know, or everybody's at least got to marvel at my technique. And, you know, I think when people break away from that, and say, what does the audience really want to take away? Can you go out humming anything from sometimes an organ recital or not?
Yes.
You know, if it's just about somebody's bedazzle, it's not enough for me.
Absolutely. That's probably one of the reasons why I love Bach so much, because I think he got it both. He got beautiful tunes, but he also has sophistication, obviously, you know, like.
Yeah, he was able to take a little simple chorale and turn it into a masterwork.
Yes.
But he was also able to steal something from Vivaldi and have fun with it.
Yes. Absolutely. So that's what was happening in Freiburg. It was a little bit elitist for my taste, and I developed this taste for pop music, rock music, film music, jazz music. So I met a jazz musician there who was doing a clinic. He was like doing a guest clinic on jazz music, and he told me that there was a college in Boston, Massachusetts called Berklee College of Music, and that you could study pop music and jazz music, all those things I wanted to go to. I'm like, I gotta do this, you know.
Oh, great.
And that was quite the news to break to my parents.
I'm sure it was.
I'm done with Freiburg, Germany, and I think I want to go to the East Coast. And they're like, what? But somehow I did convince them to let me go. And they did help me. I also had a scholarship, but you know, you still needed other support.
And I'm
very grateful that they helped me. And it was great. It was amazing. My very first class that I took there was a history of rock and roll. And they were like showing video clips of Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry and people like that. And I thought, oh, that's cool too. And there were two teachers, and they kind of did like almost like a stand up thing. They did some team teaching, and there was comedy in it. I was not used to that. I was used to very serious German classical lectures.
You were.
I was like, okay, we were having some fun now. And so I took songwriting classes, improv classes, and jazz, which again, there's a nice overlap.
With the organ.
The improv that you do in jazz and the improv you do on the organ. There was a recording class. I loved that. I always have liked recording very much. I like that process, doing multiple takes, picking the best take, maybe doing an edit, you know, getting the best performance out of somebody. Yeah. I find that very, very fascinating. And I was able to do that there. So it was a great time.
And also, you were still continuing to study the organ?
You know, I took a little bit of a break at the time. I didn't see myself necessarily continuing with that, but I did take a church job. At most times in my life when I needed money, I remembered. I've been doing
Thank
this.
Thank goodness,
since
I play the organ.
Yeah, I made money with this when I was 12. I think I can still
make
money.
I can do it again. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, there's always a need for a church organist, especially good musicians.
Absolutely.
Do you remember what church you played at?
Yes, I did. Some people might find that shocking or not shocking, but I played at Community Baptist Church in Somerville, Massachusetts. Very, very nice people.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
And it kept you at the keyboard, which is a good thing for the organ world.
Absolutely. So even though I didn't study organ at that time, I at least kept it going. I mean, in retrospect, you know that saying, youth is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Too bad it's wasted on the young.
Yeah.
That is definitely true about me in some cases, too. There I was in Boston. I didn't really explore the great organ scene there.
Yeah.
But I was busy with other stuff. But looking back, I go, hey, that wouldn't have hurt to, you know, go to some churches and check out what's there.
All the great music that goes on in Boston.
You know, I went back in 2014 to the AGO convention.
I was there, too.
Yeah.
It was a great convention.
I had such a great time.
Oh, my gosh.
And it brought back wonderful memories. And what was great, too, is you could walk. It was like a walking convention.
Yes.
You'd walk from church to church.
Every place. Yeah. And the Church of the Advent, one of my favorite places in the country to go. So much great music going on there. The beautiful Symphony Hall.
Yes.
And the organ there, Trinity Church. And, of course, the choir school for us choral folks out, the choir school at St. Paul's in Cambridge is just one of the best, wonderful new English guy doing there. So Boston's filled with great things. And so when you finished at Berklee, where'd you go next?
Yes, that was an interesting time because, again, like I was in Freiburg, now, I mean, I had a great time in college, but then college ended.
Yes, that's the scary part about college, isn't it? At the end of my graduate school, I'm going, you know, Dad, I really am getting a little nervous. Do you think I'm really going to get a job here or somewhere? Am I really going to get a church job? That's what I've trained now for 6 years to do. Is this going to happen? Or should I go on and get a doctorate right away? What's going on? You know, there's that moment of panic when you finish college, isn't there?
Absolutely. And what I had done at Berklee, I was pretty focused on the college. It was such a deep, rich experience that I didn't do that much other stuff. I did do that one church job, but I wasn't like out there like, you know, finding out what else was going on, what I was going to do after college. So college ended and I was faced with that decision. And for a while, I still hung around and I still had my college friends, still go to college events. And I realized, you know what, I think I might have to go somewhere else.
Did you play in any rock bands or other things while you were in college?
I did do some. In college, I was mostly a solo act, like a Billy Joel or Elton John kind of type, you know, playing the piano and accompanying myself singing. And that was my major at Berklee. Songwriting was my main thing. So I wrote a lot of songs. It was a very prolific time. So that was all good. But I felt I was maybe stagnating a little bit. And I asked a teacher and he felt super strong that I needed to go to LA. Now, in retrospect, I don't know why he felt so strongly about it.
Well,
you know?
You think of films and arranging.
Maybe so.
The club scene, all of that's going on here.
At the time in pop music, the big three were New York City, Nashville, and L.A. And New York City was very fascinating to me, too. To this day, I love New York City. And if an opening ever comes where I could spend some more time Can I not say that? I know, I'm being careful.
We don't want to lose you.
Well, thank you. And right now, there's no danger of that because I'm having a fantastic time here in L.A. But I love New York City. I just went there a few weeks back. And it's just energy, you know?
I love it, too.
I once did a gig in New York City. And I think it was a club gig. I played with a violin player, and for some reason I had a Roland D50 keyboard under my arm, and I was walking through New York. I'm not sure if it was a good area or not, but I was completely comfortable.
Wouldn't faze anyone, would it? Just walking down the street.
It's like 3 a.m. I have a keyboard under my arm, and I felt okay.
Of course you do.
I felt okay about it. It seemed natural. So I missed out on that, but I've visited many times. And that teacher said, it has to be L.A. So I said, okay, I'll move to L.A. And I moved cold. You know, I had one friend from college who had just moved here. And he also happened to have a room for rent. So that helped.
Good. That works.
So I thought, you know, that seems to make sense. So I moved in with my friends and my stuff. And in all honesty, when I first woke up, I traveled on my birthday, which is August 27th, and I lived in Encino in the San Fernando Valley. And the next day when I woke up, I was like, what did I just do to myself? First of all, it was so hot. And then everything kind of looked the same to me. It looked like Edward Scissorhands, you know, the opening to that movie. I was like, oh, dear. And so it wasn't love at first sight with L.A. I would say it took me maybe about a year or so to really get into it. But I made an effort. I found out what are the interesting parts.
You are into it, let me tell you.
And I drove around. And so I really wanted to make it work. But during that first year, I was definitely thinking about going back to Boston.
Oh, we're so happy you stayed.
Thank you so much. I stuck it out. I gave L.A. a
chance.
Well,
one of the things you did was play in the L.A. American Guild of Organists Convention back in 2004.
That's right.
And it was one of your arrangements of a whole Mozart symphony, right?
I actually just did the fourth movement of the last one of the Jupiter Symphony, because I always, again, I love like really happy, exuberant music. Sad, melancholy music comes easier to me. I could write a sad, melancholy song a day, but I don't want to, you know.
Well, you're so exuberant. I can't imagine that.
Well,
but
you know.
This you played at UCLA, where you are the university organist.
Yes.
And composer teacher, composition teacher?
Actually, at UCLA, I only do organ. But it's a twofold job. I teach one-on-one private instruction in Oregon, but it's also a playing position, and that comes into play in just a couple of weeks. We're going to have all these graduations at Royce Hall, so
yeah,
I'm actually going to be there.
That's a big job, university organist.
I'm going to play people in and out
there
and make some noise.
Make some more noise. Well, this is not noise. This is Dr. Christoph Bull's arrangement of the fourth movement of the Jupiter Symphony at Royce Hall at UCLA, played live for the AGO back in 2004 with organist Christoph Bull. And we will be right back with lots more.
Private Catholic schools engage and develop all aspects of our students' curiosity. Beyond truly excellent education in core academic areas, Catholic schools have a full offering in the arts, visual, performance, and music. Each school has a full spectrum of education and development in the arts. Several schools feature full orchestra, dance, band, and many other highly specialized programs. Learn more. Visit OCCatholicSchoolsWeek.com.
This coming July, join Bishop Tim Fryer, the diocesan choir, and priests from throughout the Diocese of Orange on a pilgrimage to Vatican City in Rome, followed by a Mediterranean cruise departing from Naples that will take you to some of the most beautiful and historic sites in Christendom. Visit the birthplace of St. Junipero Serra in Mallorca, Spain. Celebrate Mass in the famed Gaudi Cathedral of Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, and visit Pisa and Florence, Italy. For more information, call 877-538-0010 or go to occatholic.com/travel.
Music from the Tower, you have been listening to some music that perhaps you thought you would change channels somewhere in the middle of the show. This is Music from the Tower still, but never before on Music from the Tower have we had a piece called Nothing Compares to Prince. So tell us about this, Dr. Ball. This is an actual arrangement of yours that you played for First Congregational.
Yes, it was the last piece of my church prelude. I think this was in April of 2016. We have weekly half-hour preludes. That's one of the things that we do.
Happens at First Congregational,
yes,
every week?
10:30 a.m.
Wow.
And the reason is we have these great organs there, and we really want to feature
them.
Two
magnificent instruments.
Absolutely. So people come at 10:30, and then at the very end, I got to do something to get us into service mode. Usually, our pastor, Dr. Cole Glazier, likes high energy stuff, you know? Some churches like kind of, you know,
oodly doodly,
very quiet. Yeah. Subdued stuff, not First Church.
Christ Cathedral.
Yeah, we want energy, right?
Right.
Energy and exuberance. But that week, Prince had passed away unexpectedly. It was very shocking and sad for people. So I thought, I want to do a tribute to Prince. So I thought about what would work on the organ. So I picked two pieces, Nothing Compares to You, which was actually made famous by Sinead O'Connor. And Prince did his own version of it, too. And then Purple Rain, of course, a very, very popular piece. So Nothing Compares to You starts quiet, meditative.
Churchy.
It's a little bit like a wider shade of pale, which, of course, was inspired by the air on the G-string by Bach. So it still sounds churchy.
There's something churchy there.
There's something there. And then it gets more rocking with the Purple Rain bit. And one of the people who worked in the events department heard me practice. So he thought, this needs to have purple lighting. And we do have that.
Yeah, you have lighting.
We have great lighting. You know,
it really happen?
It happens.
Oh,
the lights changed to purple at the end of the prelude.
I love it. And it wasn't Lent, right?
it was not.
That's fantastic. Well, you have done all sorts of genre crossing and collaborative work, multimedia series called Organica.
Yes.
Tell us what that is. Was that your own creation, something you brought to L.A.?
Yes. So Organica started in Hollywood. In the 90s, I worked for Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church on Sunset Boulevard.
Beautiful organ.
Yes. Beautiful place, very fascinating, somewhat tricky place because we have a number of places in LA where we have these old parishes with a lot of real estate where the neighborhood is not as rich as it used
to.
And there's not as much money. And you kind of need to keep a place like that going, but somehow we did. And we did, of course, the masses, but we also wanted to do concerts, too. And at the time, I was playing with a friend and colleague of mine, Lily Hayden, a violin player, and she did a residency at a Hollywood club called Genghis Cohn. And residency meant she played there for several months every week and developed a repertoire. You know, she would bring in songs in, and the next week she might do some of the same songs, or she might go, oh, here's a new song I wrote. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have something like that as an organist, to take that approach of the residency? So I gave myself a residency at my own church. I did have to go to the pastor.
You weren't bestowed that title. You just gave it to yourself. I love it.
Yeah. And it started small, you know. Blessed Sacrament Church is one of those old school churches where the organ is in the loft.
Right, in the back.
And it has these beautiful stairs going up. So I said, well, I don't know how many people are going to come. Let's just go to the loft. Let's invite people to sit in the chambers, pretty much. And people loved that. And so every Saturday night after the last mass, after the 5:30 mass, we did Organica. And it was very improvisatory. There was like a spirit of experimentation. And from the get-go, I would invite other people, too. So one time it was another organist, another time it would be a violin player, another time it was somebody who played synthesizers, another time I had a percussion player. So there was that collaborative element. And I did it very similar to my friend. I had some of my hits that I would play every week. And then during the week, I thought, okay, this week I want to try this. So I played a concert for 3 months every Saturday evening, which was very good for me, too.
Well, it's always good for us to play, isn't it?
Absolutely. But because I had this residency concept, I didn't have to play a completely different concert every Saturday evening. There were some pieces that repeated. And so people kept coming back. And it was a little bit of a different crowd, too. It was some of the same crowd that would come to a rock concert. And a lot of people who like rock music also like organ music.
Of course they do.
But they wouldn't necessarily know when to come. They're not always church-going people. Or sometimes they might have been to an organ concert that was more
boring.
Like of an academic exercise.
Academics, that's
right?
A good word.
Well, I work for academia, but you know when I say that, you know what it means.
Well, and think about rock stars. Think about Elton John. I just saw this big special with Elton John on TV.
Yes.
Did you see that? It was here in Hollywood. And it was an amazing tribute to him by all these other stars playing his music. And then he got up and played his music.
Yes.
Now, when you think about how many times he's played the same song over and over and over, and people just go wild.
Yes.
And you think, well, don't you want to stop playing that and play something else? I'm sure he does. You know, and his normal concerts are big mix of that.
Yes.
But I think we often don't, we have to have a whole new program because we've got to impress our colleagues
right.
again. You know, instead of saying, well, I play this piece really well.
Yes.
And you're going to hear it again and I'll change your registration on
yes.
these great big organs we
Absolutely.
Play.
And sometimes you need to play a piece many times for it to
People
really
just
grow.
Go crazy. You play two notes and the whole audience erupts because they know that piece of Elton John, you know.
Absolutely. And then you're also right. Sometimes you can play a piece very differently. You can play it with a different registration or with a different field. We know that from
That's
church music.
The beauty of the organ.
Like the other day, somebody asked me, what's your tempo on the Bach Fugue in G minor, BWV 578? And I go, well, that really depends.
Yes, is it 8 o'clock mass or 12 o'clock mass?
Exactly. Is it a memorial service or is it a
exactly.
wedding?
I'm not music sure. changes. So yeah. when people say, well, that's it, it doesn't work that way. Not for music, you know.
Absolutely.
I play very differently at an early mass that I might play later. And I certainly play differently at the last mass of the day. We have 12.
That's right. And then there's also what our friend Frank Brownstead calls parochial customs. You know, some churches like to do things faster. Some like them more stately.
Exactly.
So sometimes you find out about that. I mean, in my sub days, I would do that. I would, you know, I didn't mean to come there and like be the rebel and I'll show you.
Yeah.
So I would ask him, how do you
no,
do this?
What tempo are you used to? Yeah. Yeah. That people feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
There's nothing like your own driver. When you're away a Sunday or two, people will say, oh, we really missed you. And what they meant was, we really missed the tempos that you know, we're used to you know, and there's something comforting about that, you know, when the organ sounds like it's supposed to for them, you know, in that congregation.
Absolutely. One time I had a dear colleague come in at First Church, Phil Smith, who I'm sure you know,
sure,
also the organ conservator at Disney Hall. And he asked me, okay, so he really asked me some specific questions as to what people were used to. And that was important to him to know what people are expecting so he wouldn't.
Well, I think every sub that's
yeah.
really worth anything
yeah.
is. We were just talking about that yesterday when we opened the cathedral. We're going to have double weddings going on in the arboretum and in the cathedral. Well, you know, sometimes we have three things going on at once, and there's only David and I.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to have some subs that come in here. But a sub who comes and sits down, like at your church at First Congregational, sits down to a 300-stop organ, that's not just your push and play, you know.
Yes.
You've got to have somebody that's going to be able to, and not just make a big mess out of it because they didn't know the organ well enough. You
yes.
know,
and of
not
course,
everybody
you know.
Can sub on a big instrument. Like
yeah.
that.
And of course you want them, I want them to be themselves too.
Right.
And there's opportunities for that. So when we have the half hour prelude, you know, there's all
do
kinds
it.
Of stuff
yeah.
you can do. Postlude, offertory, plenty of opportunities. But you know, when you're playing hymns and liturgical pieces, it's
right.
really a good idea
and
to find
that
out.
Things involve the people.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
Well, we want to hear more music.
Yes, sir.
This is a Gregorian chant. Actually, we had it on the Easter show not long ago. Victime Paschale Laudis, a gorgeous chant from the probably 5th, 6th century, wherever it came from. And this Easter chant, you have transformed a bit, right?
Yes, this was one of these organ pieces that I that is now a composition that started as an improvisation.
So this is a written down piece now.
It's now written down, but it didn't start like that. I've always loved chant and improvising on it. Actually, when I was in Hollywood, I really made a lot of effort to have more chant, even the sung chant, but also organ music based on chant. But I think it's so beautiful, and it's great for improv too. It's great improv material. So I did that with Victime, and I just thought of like an odd metered, very percussive.
Well, hold on to your hats, my friend. This isn't your grandmother's Victime. So this is going to be another wonderful piece of Christopher Bowles, kind of recorded at Hollywood Methodist. Yes?
That's right. Hollywood Methodist Church,
back
one of the old churches. And their organ was like the one at Blessed Sacrament, a Casavant organ. They were kind of sister organs. Ours was from 1927. Theirs was from 1928. And I just went across the street and recorded it there. But I also added some synthesizer part. I had a Korg 01W. And I think a Roland JD-990.
Is there some percussion in this too coming
there
in?
Is, yeah.
All right. Hold on to your hats and stay tuned for our final little episode and visit with Dr. Christopher Bull from Los Angeles. Please stay tuned. Victime Pascale Laudis.
Underwritten by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange.
This is John Romero, Music Director at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. We are 1 year away from the dedication of our beautiful cathedral, and we have some spectacular concerts available to you. Check them all out at ChristCathedralMusic.org or on our Facebook page, Christ Cathedral Music. We'd love to see you here.
Christ Cathedral Concerts. Great music in a sacred place. For tickets, visit ChristCathedralMusic.org.
Would you like an opportunity to read and discuss inspiring books by bright Catholic authors? The OC Catholic Book Club offers quarterly book titles reviewed and chosen by Bishop Kevin Vann. Every 3 months, members gather to meet the author and hear informed commentary about the book by local church scholars. Membership in the OC Catholic Book Club includes 4 books and tickets to the author forums. For more information, visit occatholic.com/oc-catholic-book-club or call 714-282-3045.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. This is our last little bit with Christoph Bull. We have had so much fun today on today's show, hearing about all sorts of collaborations. Christoph, we just began to scratch the surface on Organica.
Yes.
And we just heard a fabulous piece based on a Victor May chant.
Yes.
But this has morphed beyond just the walls of your church.
Yes. It started on the small side, like I explained in the last segment. When I started in UCLA, which was 2002, I had access to Royce Hall, which is a big traditional concert hall where some really great people have played. There's a great history of music there. And they had an organ series that was already established by my predecessor, Tom Harmon, which was also partially funded by the Amundsen Endowment for organ.
Wonderful.
So that gave us an opportunity to do concerts. So on one hand, we did invite guest artists, distinguished guest artists like Paul Jacobs or Felix Hell.
Sure.
And I got to do my Organica, only bigger.
On big stage.
Bigger stage. And we also started increasing the visual component. You know, the very first one I did, I collaborated with a so-called VJ, a video DJ from New York City, Benton C. Bainbridge, and Stephen Aleppa, who is local. So the two of them created video images to go with the organ. And so it was kind of more like a feast for the senses.
Yeah.
And on the second one...
Well, that collaboration of the arts is just fabulous.
Exactly. And, you know, I like it. It's just another thing. There's also some people who really dislike that. They go, oh, I don't want any visuals. I just want the music. I'm always telling them, just close your eyes.
Close your eyes.
And don't watch.
Look away.
Yeah. I like it.
Well, our own
wonderful
Carl St. Clair just did that with the Bruckner event.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there were gorgeous images on the thing, and it went with the music. You were there. You played some wonderful pieces on the
organ.
That's
right. And I made good friends with the visual artist, Nick and Clemens Prokop.
Yeah, it was genius, wasn't it? It was beautiful.
It was very nice. And we're actually talking about doing something in the future together. So stay tuned for that.
I hope you'll be doing it right here at Christ Cathedral.
Oh, now we're talking, man.
We've got great screens ready to go.
All right. So let's talk, Sean. That sounds great.
I love it. Stay tuned, Music from the Tower listeners.
Yes. So that's coming up. I've also done a lot of work with Norton Wisdom, who is a performance painter or interpretive painter. So he has a 12-foot fiberglass canvas and paints live to the music.
Wow.
And the canvas is backlit so people can see it. And he's a genius and pioneer of that. So he's been part of Organica as well. We also took it to Germany, our collaboration. So that's kind of what happened with Organica.
And can you still attend these concerts? How often do they happen?
We haven't done them as much, partially because I feel a lot of pressure to do another Organica event because people have high expectations. The last one I did was at First Church, and Norton Wisdom was a guest again. I also had a violin player and a beautiful mezzo-soprano who I have a 5-year-old son with.
That lady,
Ichin. We actually ended the concert with Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. Mm. That was the encore. But we also did a big arrangement of the Bolero by Ravel, and we did something very interesting. We did a piece by Olivier Messiaen, Chant d'Ossois. No, I really butchered the French of that. I always wanted to learn French, and I never quite got around to Bird Chants.
Yes.
And I invited a colleague from UCLA, an ornithologist, to talk about the bird calls.
Great.
And we actually,
it sounds fascinating.
And we played recordings of the actual birds, and I said, okay, now for the Messiaen piece.
I promise we will have a link to this on the website so all of you can and just take part. Every week when we end our show, we talk about go out and hear and experience live performance. We're so into our little CDs and our iPods and iPads and everything, but hearing things live, is there's nothing like it.
Absolutely.
You know, and seeing a multimedia presentation like yours or like Carl did with the Bruckner,
yes,
any of these things, to me, is just heaven on earth.
You know? Absolutely.
So get out there, my friends. This has been such a good time. And you know that this little man, Christoph, will be right back here on Music from the Tower very, very soon, because you've got a million new projects on the horizon, right?
That's right. I'm also, so I told you about the visual collaboration with the Prokop Brothers in Germany, and I'm also working with DJ/guitarist Alexis Rodriguez. We did an event called Organ and Beats, also at First Church.
So he had
all these little drum machines and made beats, and I jammed out with that, and then he got his electric guitar. So, you know, we did that, and that was very well received as well.
Well,
and so we got to do a sequel to that one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll have it on the website at ChristCathedralMusic.org. And Christoph, thank you so much for being with us today. This was just a fascinating look in this amazing man's musical life. Thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. It was just great. We're going to go off with one more piece before we sign off. It's Psalm 69. That sounds churchy to me. Am I misled here?
It does. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure to
My
talk to
pleasure.
A colleague.
I can't wait.
And, Psalm 69, Answer Me, is from my pop album, Old School. It's actually the only religious song on that album, even though, I mean, I'm a believer, so that always informs what I write. But this was a text from the Old Testament, Psalm 69, and I turned it into an arrangement that features drums and bass, and I'm playing the Hammond B3. And I'm singing as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're going to go off with that. And we will have a lot more from Christoph Bull in future episodes, I promise, Radio Land, because there's a lot more to learn about this fascinating man. Thank you so much for being on. Thank you for listening. And until next time, get out and hear some live performance, maybe when you see the name Christoph Bull. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Music from the Tower.
My prayer to you, answer me, oh God. same.